Welcome everybody to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am joined by you guys. I am starting the show in a different way, and this is going to be the new normal. I'm making a bit of an announcement here. So one of the things I think is a fair criticism of the show is that because it's more of a free-flowing kind of conversation, people don't necessarily, they aren't told ahead of time what to expect in the show. So what I'm going to do from now on is I'm going to record the show the same way I always have and still have those same kind of casual conversations that I think the you guys as listeners have really enjoyed. And then what I'm going to do is basically summarize it and tell you what to expect heading into it. So in this one, for example, I start by quickly recapping the game that the Lakers just played, in which they beat the Clippers 131-106, and Talen Horton-Tucker just won over anybody who was watching that game, including Mike Breen and Mark Jackson. So that was a blast. And then I dive into your questions, and some of the topics that you guys wanted to hear about was about, you know, how this team compares offensively and defensively. That's in the second question. We have some questions about the starting lineup, which is how we finish the show, and whether the Lakers should start Schroeder or KCP. Somebody even asked about whether or not LeBron James and Anthony Davis should come off of the bench just to earn them some extra rest, given how deep this team is. So it's a great show. It's a really fun show. Same, everything is the same. It's just the intro is going to be different from now on as I get you guys prepared for what the show is going to be. So without further ado, let's get this thing going. Well, that sure was fun. Talen Horton-Tucker is going to be what anybody wants to talk about for probably the foreseeable future. He had 19-9 in the Lakers preseason opener and followed that up with a 33-point, 10-rebound, 4-assist night. Only had 2 turnovers in 41 minutes, shoots 11 of 17 from the field, 4 of 5 from 3-point range, 7 of 9 from the line. And my favorite moment of the night was when he hit that step back 3-pointer and Mike Breen just goes, "Good Lord." That was unbelievable. That was unreal. And to watch LeBron James react to it, and to watch the rest of the Lakers react to it, to watch Frank Vogel kind of lean back like a proud father at what Talen Horton was doing in that game was something to behold. Today's show, I'm going to recap the game here really quickly and then throw to your guys' questions, of which there are plenty. So I'm going to go ahead and really quickly just recap this one. So the Lakers beat the Clippers 131-106. Was never particularly close. They are now 2-0 in the preseason, despite Anthony Davis and LeBron James not playing, and despite Paul George and Kawhi Leonard actually playing. The Clippers, all of their main guys have been active in these games, and you look at what the Lakers have done in those minutes against the Clippers rotation without LeBron, without Anthony Davis, and it's preseason, and stars don't normally try in the preseason. But those disclaimers aside, the Lakers outscored the Clippers 39-29 in that first quarter, and then gave up a few points in the second. And some of it is outlier shooting. The Lakers, I believe, shot 70-something% from 3-point range today. 72% from 3-point range. That's probably not repeatable. But to me, what was really interesting was the kind of looks that they were getting, the kind of looks that they were knocking down. The passing on this team is ridiculous. Dennis Schroeder didn't play, as well as Anthony Davis, as well as LeBron James. Wesley Matthews also didn't play. The Lakers have had to play a very short rotation in these first couple preseason games just because people just aren't available right now. And yet you look at the way that this team shares the ball already. I don't want to overreact because it's two preseason games, and it's two preseason games that have gone about as well as you could possibly hope for. But the way that this team shares the ball, I was watching this game with Jen, and she was doing some work, and she just kept telling me, like, Fred, you got to shut up. You got to stop reacting like this. I'm trying to get some work done. And she had to tell me that a bunch of times because I was sitting there cackling like a doofus on the couch because of the way this team shares the ball. It's legitimately fun to watch a team share the ball and have this kind of chemistry so early on in this process. Remember, before these games started, I talked with Pete about the things that I was really looking forward to. And yeah, yeah, the things that I was looking forward to was, hey, can we see what kind of chemistry this team builds together? Can we see what a squad, you know, which combinations make the most sense and all of that? One of the ones I was really looking forward to was Marc Gasol and guys like Kyle Kuzma. I believe, yeah, Caruso also didn't play. So you look at the guys who didn't play. So Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Alex Caruso, Wesley Matthews, Dennis Schroeder. That's a really good lineup. Those guys don't play, but because so many of the guys who did make so much sense alongside each other, you're just looking at a team that hey, you look. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself here, and you know, just so we're all on the same page, I'm very far ahead of myself here, but I don't want to get too far ahead of myself when I say that this is potentially one of the best Lakers teams of my lifetime. That's insanely high praise, seeing as I lived through the three-peat, obviously watched Kobe and Powell win those two championships back-to-back, watched last year's team do what they did in the postseason. But you look at the way that these pieces kind of fit together right now, early on in this process, as it might be, and offensively, this is a special, special group. Let's go ahead and take a quick second here, and when we come back, I'm gonna open it up and I'm gonna answer your guys' questions and mix in some notes on what I've seen over the course of these couple games. But good Lord, one more time before I throw to that though, 131-106, the Lakers beat the Clippers in their preseason, the second preseason game thus far. They have a couple days off and play on Wednesday against the Phoenix Suns, at which point they might get LeBron James and Anthony Davis back. And good Lord, that is something to look forward to. Let's take a quick second. When we come back, I'm going to go ahead and answer your guys' questions. Before I get to your guys' questions or more of them, I want to make sure you guys understand what great content we are putting up across this network. You have hosts covering everything from the entire Houston Rockets fiasco. Locked On Nuggets has had that nailed down from the beginning. You have the situation in Brooklyn and how rapidly that is evolving, and our hosts have been incredible on those fronts as well. So I just want to make sure that if there is a team that you're interested in, whether it's because it's a team that the Lakers might be contending against for a title, a team that you're just kind of interested in the situation, the Locked On NBA podcast network is going to have you guys covered. So check out some of those shows, and occasionally I show up on them, usually pissing off the host of that show. But still, it's fun all the same. All right, so the first question here comes from Saul the Kid. He writes, listening to talk about how Rich Paul is the one running the Lakers makes me think about how there is a similar argument in soccer. There are agents that are referred to as super agents because they look out for players' interests more than the team's interests, and they tend to force teams to do things that they don't want to. And I'm guessing the question here is if I'm concerned about such a relationship playing out that way here between the Lakers and Clutch. Thus far, I can only judge based off of how it's gone thus far, but thus far, I would say that, you know, while the Lakers obviously have a pro-Clutch bias here, they do tend to go find guys from that agency and try to provide the best situation for everybody involved there, especially with Clutch, as they possibly can. And, you know, I guess it's, you know, it's a somewhat fair question. I just think, you know, if we're judging based off of how things are going thus far, I don't really know that I have many complaints, if any, really. The thing here is, I think we are heading in this direction where agents are going to be at the forefront of our minds more than they have been ever, right? For a long time, basically all but the last year-ish, maybe year or two, agents were these shadow characters who kind of sort of ran the league, right? And it was this poorly kept secret that people didn't really want to talk about because they preferred to operate in the shadows. Well, Rich Paul comes along and the Clutch agency comes along and they say, why would we do that? If there's a chance for us to be branded as this agency that does whatever it has to put our clients in the best situations, why wouldn't we want credit for that as it's happening? And what you saw this last offseason was anytime a player signed a contract, you saw who negotiated that deal for said player, right? That wasn't a thing that existed before Rich Paul was leaking to whichever reporter it was that the deal, or, you know, how the deal came together, whichever deal it was for Rich Paul's clients. And, you know, now you're seeing X NBA player, you know, X, Y, or Z NBA player signs a multi-year 40-something million dollar deal negotiated by X, Y, Z agent here. And as agents want to be taking more credit, why not align yourself with the agent who represents not just LeBron James, but potentially the best player in the league in Anthony Davis, and a network of players who are maybe closer than most, you know, players who share the same agent across the NBA because of the way Clutch treats their clients. So, and you know, when you're talking about if Clutch is operating in a way that is putting the player ahead of the team, well, it's hard to make that case when LeBron James extends before he hits free agency. Anthony Davis signs a potential 5-year contract in an era where players are signing the shortest contracts that stars have ever signed in the NBA. And, you know, if you're saying that Rich Paul is too focused or maybe more focused on what's best for his clients than what he's doing for the Lakers while the Lakers have this relationship with him, it's kind of hard to make that point so far. Montrezl Harrell takes a deal below market level to come to the Lakers. He's a Clutch client. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is probably underpaid given what he did in the postseason last year. Now, yes, over the course of his time as a Laker, hard to call him underpaid, but where he is right now and where Montrezl Harrell is in his career right now, hard to say that the Lakers are getting a raw deal out of this. So I just think whatever the Lakers have to do to continue to cultivate the relationship that they currently have with Rich Paul, they should just keep on doing that, because to this point, it's hard to argue that it's anything but super beneficial to the Lakers organization. Next question here comes from Mr. T Squared. He writes, four-time NBA All-Star, led the league in assists per game 3 times, 2012, 2013, 2016, All-NBA third team in 2011, 2012, earned 4 NBA All-Defensive Team honors, twice on the first time, 2009, 2010, and then 2010, 2011. He is also ranked 11th in NBA history for triple-doubles with 32 in the regular season, 10 to go with the playoffs, 2-time NBA champion with the 2008 Celtics and 2020 Lakers. I guess this is the resume here I know this is the resume here for Rajon Rondo and whether or not he's a Hall of Famer. I just think he has some work that he still needs to do there. It's a great resume, and would it shock me if he's a Hall of Famer eventually? No, not particularly. I'm just very, very tough on players who get in. I mean, to be frank, there are players across sports currently in the Hall of Fame that I would have no problem whatsoever taking out, right? So I think for Rajon Rondo, I think he's going to have to accumulate bigger counting stats than he currently has, because that tends to play a pretty big role in it. He needs to play a significant role in maybe another championship team, which I don't see given that he is currently in Atlanta. He probably, you know, really needs to have maybe 3-4 years playing, you know, playoff Rondo type basketball in those big moments. And, you know, if all that stuff comes to fruition and he's a Hall of Famer, that's great. But just like Pete said the other day, what he's done or what he did over the course of his career to get into the Hall of Fame, a lot of that didn't take place with the Lakers. And because of that, I don't think they ever retire his number. I can't believe this is an actual conversation we're having right now. Let's go one more question here before we throw to the break. Marcus Robbins writes, "Hey, Anthony, I'm a diehard NBA/LeBron fan, and watching the Lakers run to a title this past season inspired me to try covering the league myself as well on YouTube. My latest video is a historical comparison of the Lakers versus other defending champions. Over the 40 years of defending champs, this Lakers team is returning the lowest number of players who averaged over 15 minutes per game. I also found that despite defending champs usually maintaining continuity and bringing back an average of 8 players who played over 15 minutes per game, defending champs still slide a few spots on defensive and offensive rank. Given the amount of turnover on the roster already, where do you guys see the Lakers ending up on offense and defense this season compared to last year?" So Pete and I have talked quite a bit about how this is not your typical defending champion team, reigning champion team. They have changed their identity. They've shifted a lot more to a focus on offense. And thus far, you know, based on what we've seen in these couple games here, that offensive identity is pretty impressive thus far. If that is a trend that is going to continue, if this is potentially the worst that they're going to look this year, you know, just in terms of comfort with each other, understanding of an expectation of where guys are going to be on the court. You have seen quite a few plays where, you know, Montrezl Harrell, for example, today floated the ball to the corner when nobody was there because he anticipated somebody being there. There was a miscommunication. Quinn Cook flared more to the wing, not to the corner, and that ball was a turnover. So it's very early in the process, and given how good they've looked thus far against a very good defensive team that is returning a lot of their best defenders, this is a very promising season thus far, promising preseason thus far. And, you know, if you're asking me to compare where they're going to sit offensively, defensively, I think they're going to be significantly better offensively, especially in the half court, and maybe a little bit worse defensively than they were last year. But, you know, the one thing I will say is that, you know, the Lakers last year weren't very good in the half court, right? So that means that they were going up against, defensively, they were going up against a live ball, whether it's a rebound or a turnover, more often than they might be going against that this season, because they're going to be better offensively. These two things, like the offense leading to good defense, defense leading to good offense, these two things are always very intertwined and very connected. And so, you know, while the Lakers might not be as good individually defensively, you might be looking at a better group defensively because of how often they'll be able to get back and reset while the other team pulls the ball out of the net. So we'll see what this all looks like, but I do think it's a good year. It was a good concept to maybe not bring the same group back together as normal champions would, because that wasn't a normal championship. That wasn't, you know, that was, they had that super long break in the middle of the season. There was no such thing as home court advantage for anybody. They got to shoot in the same gym for a lengthy amount of time, and as a result, everybody's shooting was better. So I actually, you know, now that I see it, especially now that I've seen it in action, I'm actually really happy that the Lakers didn't just bring the, you know, bring the old gang back together to be able to, or to try to repeat. I just think the identity shift is very promising, because typically half court efficiency on offense is generally how you're going to win in the NBA. And this looks like a very dangerous offensive team in those situations. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to finish off with a few more of your questions. Today's show is brought to you in part by Built Bar. Head on over to builtbar.com. Use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll save 20% off your next order of the best protein bars you will ever get. And you thought they were great before? Well, check out these new flavors. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia. You can maybe guess which one I may or may not have had a role in naming. I didn't, but still, that's if I was going to name a protein bar, that's what it would sound like. Lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. You get that in addition to coconut almond, raspberry, orange, toffee almond, double chocolate, salted caramel, all of those good, great flavors. And they are just as refreshing, just as filling as they have ever been. And like I said, you can still continue to get them for 20% off your next order. So every time you hop on there, go to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, all one word, and you will get 20% off every order that you put in on that website. And I just can't understand why you would ever stop ordering such a great product. So one more time, if you're looking for a gift for your family member, or you're looking for a stocking stuffer, it's a great stocking stuffer. Head on over to builtbar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and you will get 20% off your next order. One more time, builtbar.com, promo code LOCKEDON. Together in the beginning of the season. The starters would be Kuzma, Schroeder, Harrell, KCP, and THT or Morris. And then bringing off the bench, you have LeBron, AD, Gasol, Caruso, and Matthews. And then have them close anyway. We'll give your bench players confidence and instill fear in the league, knowing that our bench on any given night can play with the opposing team starters. Just saying, Nick Batchelor from Honolulu, Hawaii. It's a fun concept. I just don't really see it happening, because the team, you know, usually the unit that starts plays the most time by quite a bit than any other five-man combination on, you know, in your potential groupings and combinations that you're possibly going to have. So I do think that the Lakers are really, and then the other thing too is, so in years past, in the last few couple of years, maybe even last year, the five-man unit that you were going to have might not be your best overall unit, but you know, you could get away with a potential, you know, slight step back just because of the situations that those best units are actually going to be playing together. But seeing as the Lakers can put together a five-man unit that, there's no other way to say this, the fact that they can start the five most talented players and not piss off or not set off the politics of a locker room, I think they're going to do just that. So I think you're going to see, aside from Harrell, who I think is going to come off of the bench and be a sixth man of the year candidate again, you're probably going to see Schroeder, KCP, or Matthews, LeBron, AD, and Marc Gasol, and that kind of team, whatever it looks like, whether it's Matthews or KCP, that type of group is a kind of group that can really come out and punch teams in the face and set a tone and make it so that a now much better bench, by the way, you're looking at bench lineups of Caruso, either KCP or Matthews, whoever doesn't start, Kuzma, Harrell, and Keefe, and then whichever of Anthony Davis and LeBron James stays on the court in those moments, you're looking at a much better bench unit that is going to be put in better situations on average than last year's bench was. And so that's going to, so you're asking a more talented unit to do less or be able to do more with an easier situation in front of them. And that in and of itself is another thing that's very exciting heading into the season. So, it's an interesting concept, the idea of bringing those guys off of the bench. You get some extra rest or something like that, especially early in the year. But LeBron and AD, guys like that, take it very seriously that they are starters, because they should be. They're all-timers. And I just think that they're probably going to start. And when they start, depending on who else is with them in that starting lineup, this is going to be, more of your typical starting lineup where, the Lakers can come out, set a tone very early that for certain teams, there is just nothing they're going to be able to do to stop the Lakers from just looking terrifying in some moments, especially offensively. Let's go Shuba Modern in San Carlos. Last offseason, when Vogel was assembling his coaching staff, he said they needed an offensive tactician. There were times when the half-court offense sputtered last season. Do you think Vogel and his staff are able to take full advantage of all the offensive versatility they have now? So they didn't really address that concern of mine. There were a couple guys. Alvin Gentry was on the market for a little bit. He went up to Sacramento. I understand why he went to Sacramento. He's basically going to be Luke Walton's replacement when he's inevitably, geez, you know how sometimes you say a word and you repeat it and it just sounds weirder? Inevitably, that's what that sounded to me. But anyway, eventually Walton is going to be fired and Gentry is going to take over. So I can kind of understand why Gentry took that job. There were a couple offensive tacticians who also hit the market, but also, the Lakers have personnel where LeBron is going to be the offensive tactician. Marcus Gasol is going to be the tactician. Dennis Schroeder some nights is going to be the tactician. And the Lakers staff is going to be basically focused on maintaining the culture that they had last year defensively and optimizing the situation based on who is on the court in a way that goes beyond the tactics and strategy people... When you talk about coaching in the NBA, what winds up being a lot more important by a lot is managing of egos, managing of personalities, making sure that people mesh. And this is something that, to be completely honest, Doc Rivers has been a part of a few too many shitty locker rooms, right? The kind of locker rooms that after that team breaks up, you get reports of, so-and-so hated so-and-so, and so-and-so hated so-and-so, and nobody really did much to calm those waters over the course of the season. And, one of the things that I really think Vogel deserves a ton of credit for last year was his managing of egos, his own ego as well, by the way. Any coach that coaches LeBron James knows going into it that LeBron is going to get the lion's share of the praise when things go well, and then you're probably going to get dumped on more than anybody when things don't go well. Vogel didn't care about that. He earned LeBron James's respect. He earned Anthony Davis's respect. He earned the entire locker room's respect and got those guys to commit to playing defense in a way that, seriously suffocated the teams that they matched up against, especially in the playoffs. And I think, this year is going to be another interesting one where it's going to be such a good offensive team that sometimes offensive teams take for granted how good they are offensively and start to slip just kind of subconsciously defensively. And it's going to be on Vogel. It's going to be on Kidd. I think a really cool dynamic here is that relationship that Marc Gasol and Lionel Hollins are bringing over from the grit and grind era. That's going to be really interesting to kind of pay attention to. So I just think, you know, you're looking at a very interesting coaching dynamic here. But, you know, Vogel has some sway now. He has some credit in the bank account because of the success that the Lakers had last year. LeBron probably now fully trusts him. So that's a giant load off. Davis, same thing. So further load off there. And it's such a smart offensive team that I'm not sure you maybe need a tactician in the way that you normally would. Next question here comes from Shush. Hey, Anthony and Pete, quick question. I hear a lot of people projecting the Lakers starters as Dennis Schroeder, KCP, LeBron, AD, and Trez. I prefer KCP, Matthews, Braun, AD, Gasol. My thinking is if it worked last year, why make the drastic change, that drastic of a change this lineup has shooters at five positions? So I think this is where the Lakers' understanding of how talented players in the NBA, like Schroeder isn't a superstar, obviously, right? So if he isn't a superstar, do the Lakers need to bend over backwards the way they did for Anthony Davis not wanting to play the five in the regular season? No, probably not. But do they want to maintain a good enough relationship with him and his agent so that if this team meshes the way that we think it could possibly mesh, that Schroeder is willing to do whatever it takes to stick around and continue to be a core Los Angeles Laker? Yeah, I would say that there's some value in that. So I think, you know, with Schroeder, he wants to be a starter. He's good enough to be a starter. And I think he's going to be a starter. Now, in terms of, you know, the theory behind the question, yeah, I agree that KCP was good enough starting in the postseason that he should be allowed to start at that position again. And then you can have some more size out there. And some of the identity that the Lakers had last year, you now carry that over into this season, and you see what that looks like. I get it. I really do. But I just think from the aspect of maintaining egos and making sure that Schroeder is happy and everybody is on the same page at least to start the year. By the way, whatever team they start the year with as the starting group, by no means whatsoever is that going to be the group that finishes the year. We're going to see Vogel, you know, kind of tinker here and do that, do all kinds of things to make sure that lineup is always optimized. So whatever group starts the year as the starting group, the chances are that's probably not going to be the group that finishes the year as the starters. Now, for the other reason why I think it makes sense to start Schroeder is that way, you know, so just from the standpoint of having a starting unit and then having a bench unit and having those things remain semi-consistent, you go Schroeder to Caruso, right? You go either KCP to Matthews or Matthews to KCP. You go LeBron to Kuzma. You go Anthony Davis to Montrezl Harrell. You go Marc Gasol to Markieff Morris. Or Anthony Davis stays in the game and he slides down to the five and Morris comes in for LeBron James. You know, and you have these units that basically can serve and develop chemistry together that is really important given the way that this year is going to operate. And hell, you know, we've seen Talen Horton Tucker play so well that he should probably get some of those minutes as well. So you know, it's just how it's not as simple as it is in NBA 2K where you can kind of just turn off the chemistry button and, you know, guys resign with your team when you're running it as a mind GM with a lot less complications than you see in the real world. So Schroeder came to the Lakers kind of anticipating or expecting to be a starter. He's good enough to earn that spot over the course of training camp, and he likely will earn that spot in training camp. And then over the course of the season, you have enough time to, if that isn't working, find somebody else who maybe makes more sense. And you can kind of go with it. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Pete and I will be back tomorrow to talk more about Taylor Horton Tucker, because I know you guys are going to.